Good afternoon, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, using predictive analytics to reduce equipment downtime, improve product quality, and decrease costs in the age of the industrial Internet of Things. I know that's a long title, but I assure you it is a great topic, and I'll be telling you why in just a minute. My name is Rich Nass, and I lead the embedded and IoT franchises here at Open Systems Media. But more importantly, I will be your moderator for this eCast. On this eCast, you'll hear from two speakers. It'll be Lynn Sweetwood of IBM and Simon Collins of Prism Tech. And you'll definitely be able to tell them apart, and you'll hear why when they start speaking. But here's why I think this topic is so important. What we've become really good at is collecting information. We have tons and tons of data. What we're not really good at is making use of that information. And that's what's super important on the industrial side for sure, where equipment downtime is something that could result in a loss of lots and lots of dollars. And that number could escalate significantly based on what it is you're manufacturing, what the amount of downtime is, and so on. So before I introduce the first speaker, let me go over some of the housekeeping items. This entire presentation will take about 40, 45 minutes, give or take a few, and that will leave us plenty of time to answer your questions, and we'll get to as many as time permits. You'll find on your console window a button that allows you to enter your questions in real time. And as I said, we'll answer as many as we can after the two speakers are done with their presentations. If we don't have a chance to answer your question, someone will get back to you after the eCast is over. So we will answer every question, just maybe not on the eCast, depending on how many we get and how much time we have. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, if your slides aren't advancing or the audio is coming in and out, put that question into the question box, and one of our technicians will respond to you during the eCast on what the problem is and how to solve the problem. On the console, there's a button to enlarge your slides. If you click on that button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You can also click on the forward to a friend button if you'd like to send an email to somebody about this event. And this eCast will be posted online shortly after we're done, and an audio podcast will also be available. Okay, enough for me. Let me tell you about our two speakers. First, you'll hear from Lynn Sweetwood, who is a Senior Technical Solutions Specialist at IBM Watson IoT Analytics Group, specializing in predictive maintenance and quality. He has an electrical engineering background with work in control systems and robotics. He moved into the software realm and has spent more than 25 years in roles from development, product management, sales, and business development. Over the course of his career, he served as Vice President of Product Development, Vice President of Product Marketing, General Manager, CIO, company founder, and lots of other stuff. So he's done it all. His focus has been in the industrial sector, which includes oil and gas, mining, energy, travel and transportation, and manufacturing. When Lynn is done, he will be handing it off to Simon Collins, a Senior Product Manager at Prism Tech. Simon is responsible for software platforms for the industrial Internet of Things. He obtained a bachelor's degree in microelectronics and computing, followed by a master's degree in advanced manufacturing systems, and has worked as an engineer in a number of industries, including manufacturing, nuclear, and defense. He has been in product management roles for almost 20 years, working with product portfolios covering a range of different technologies. Whew. Okay, without any further ado, here's Lynn. Lynn, take it away.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate that. Good afternoon, everyone. As you mentioned, this is Lynn Sweetwood, and I work in the Watson IoT, which is a bit of a mouthful to understand really what is we apply our technology to. But IBM has been focusing a lot on what really is the Internet of Things. How can we apply the capability to communicate and monitor equipment and so forth in such a way that we can really help understand what our assets are doing, what the performance is like, and then how we can reduce the downtime and so forth. Because as we all know, it can really apply to lots of different industries, lots of different use cases and scenarios. Most of the time, we're really looking at how do we look at the problem, how do we look at that asset, then understand what's causing a delay, what's causing a failure, what's causing sort of the life cycle to be shorter or longer than another, and then be able to feed that back into optimizing our maintenance schedules, changing our preventative maintenance processes and strategies, and potentially even changing up the life cycle replenishment of our assets and so forth. there's sort of a cycle, and you can see on this slide there's a lot of different things we can do and different types of assets we can go at, from linear to rotational assets to all kinds of, whether it's pipes or motors and so on. The process that we typically go through, there we go, I was waiting for an update. We call it our cognitive vision. If you look at the bottom left, there's a picture of a big haul truck there from a mining operation. Whether it's a haul truck, whether it's an aircraft, whether it's a simple pump motor or some other drive motor, we pull up information from those devices and sensors directly. We can also pull from your historians such as OSI-PI or an MES or any other type of SCADA, PLCs, and so forth. We gather that information and then pull that into the Watson IoT platform. And this platform really does a couple of things. One, we're looking for real-time information to be able to send that back to the piece of equipment or to a handheld device or some sort of system that's looking for some direction on what am I going to do with the abnormal behavior or the particular behavior of that platform at the moment. The second thing it does once we've captured the data is we send it on to our predictive analytics platform. And this platform allows us to not only look historically at data, but what's happening now, and train our models initially to understand what indicates a failure. So as you pull in lots of different types of data, whether it's temperature, sensors, maybe speed, vibration, throughput, and so on, you come up with a behavioral list, if you will, or a model, a representation of the data that allows you to predict when a failure may or may not occur. And from that platform, as new data comes in, I want to do some of the buzz phrase you'll hear is machine learning. I want to be able to continuously learn as the data comes in to understand, has my data set changed? Has my behavior changed? And look at some of the patterns for that behavior. If a lot of you are engineers, you're probably very familiar with a statistical process chart. And we know we have an upper control limit, a lower control limit, and I'll show you some examples of that in a moment. But as that measurement goes above or below one of those limits, we look at it and we say, what does this really mean? But the problem is we'll have an exception occur, and then it'll recover. Do we trigger an alarm? If we continue to trigger so many of the alarms, or engineers continue to typically ignore the alarm because it's just another false alarm. We don't want to see that. So the machine learning allows us to look at that data and come up with what we think is really an accurate score for the health of that particular asset. But that's not enough. Usually if we're only doing predictive analytics, we get a score. That's interesting. But if we don't apply business rules and optimization to it, we're sort of missing the boat. The idea of predictive analytics is great, but you want to tie to it, well, how critical is that asset? Where does it fit within my manufacturing line? Where does it fit in the criticality of the process that I'm running? Maybe it's important, maybe it's not. If I have thousands, tens of thousands, even millions of assets that I'm trying to track, the problem is we come in with, well, I have 10,000 of my million right now that are causing me a problem. And which ones do I pay attention to first? So you apply business rules and then an optimization engine to it. That's part of that predictive analytics box that you see on the screen and part of our vision. The next one over is cognitive. Cognitive is a new buzzword. Everybody hears a lot about what the heck does cognitive mean. It's really all about being able to interface with the data and interface with the system and the recommendations in a way that we're used to dealing with other human beings. So if I were to ask a question in a human fashion, just type it out, the system would be smart enough to understand what did I mean, the concepts, if you will, categorize them, and then start pulling back data and visualizations of that data in a way that I will understand. And it might even come back with suggestions on, well, did you really mean this? Or here's some additional information that might help you in making your decision. So the last word I just said there is really what this all comes down to. All the work we're doing is leading towards the next best decision. How do I make a decision, and what should that decision be? Sometimes we take the institutionalized knowledge, the knowledge that the person's been on the job 20, 30 years has typically, and we want to turn that into some recommended actions that anyone can follow. That we don't need that 30-year veteran to come up to that piece of equipment and tell you what's wrong. We'll use that person's information, absolutely. Put it into a knowledge base that we can then turn around and tie to our cognitive analytics, to the data that we're dealing with, the scenario that we're dealing with, and then allow us to make a decision. Now, what do we do with those decisions? As you can see on the right-hand side of the cognitive analytics, it goes into lots of different areas. The worker safety app, We have some cognitive analytics, which is very interesting in following people through what we call wearables, whether it's on a vest, whether it's in a hat, something that to track that person. Are they in the authorized area? Are they healthy? Is the heat too high? So forth. There's lots of scenarios where the safety is vital concern, and we want to make sure that person is tracked, and we give a recommendation to the supervisor as well as to the person themselves. There's tech services and support apps. We want to know how to fix something. The cognitive analytics allows us to search through the web, through lots of different sources to bring to bear information, allows us to take that action and to perform a repair or perform an action to maintain that particular asset. We have a scenario in one manufacturing line that I'm dealing with where you have a window 8 hours a day, 8 hours a month to perform maintenance on that particular part of the line. But during the day, you'll have a 30 to 40 minute window at each shift break to go do some quick maintenance. And what maintenance do you do? Which one's most important? Which one's probably been skipped the last several days or weeks and needs to be done based on the failure of probability of failure? So that system will then tell us in that quick amount of time, what action should I take? So I don't do the same 1, 2, 3 every time. It might be 4, 5, and 6 I need to do. And finally, we can integrate with an enterprise asset management system to feed in and schedule your maintenance and help optimize all those actions that you're going to do. Because at the end of the day, we do a preventative maintenance program or a preventative maintenance strategy that allows us to ensure proper functioning of our equipment and to reduce the field failures. Because as we all know, field failures usually cost 10 times what a normal maintenance schedule would be. But because we're so worried about those field failures, we typically over-maintain our assets. We're spending a lot more money than we really need to, and we're not looking at the specific behavior of that asset. So let's take a motor. A motor that's used sporadically might be the exact same motor used, however, in a different part of the line or your process that's used all the time. So the parameters of its performance and how often it's used and how it's used is going to vary then its life cycle and how long it's going to last. And that needs to be put into your preventative maintenance strategy so that you're efficient and effective at the same time. Let me give you a couple examples of what that looks like. So this is an actual steel plant. This is, you can see across the top there, we're actually monitoring real KPIs. We're monitoring some processes throughout the plant. The one that's highlighted here is a finishing mill. And you're seeing, if you can see closely there, there's some motor currents and speed and temperature and so forth. The top right there, right sort of in the middle, you'll see some anomalies. We'll track during the monitoring of the performance of this, we'll track what's really happening. That might be a live feed in from your sensors or through a historian or OSI-PI type of system. And we can track what the system is doing and then check it against its past history to see, is that normal or is it anomalous? Now, in that example, the SPC that I talked about, or the statistical process chart, just because it triggers a limit exception, well, okay, so what? If my model is watching for a pattern that says, I've seen that pattern before, it's going to recover, ignore it, fine. Great. But if I'm starting to see a pattern that's different, so one of the things like on motors, it says your bearings start to wear out or your lubrication goes down, you're going to see a spike on the ramp up on the motor as it starts to turn on. And that gets higher and higher. And it's hard to see with the naked eye. And you want to know before it fails. Our analytics will allow you to look far into the future to see, well, you know, if it keeps going in this path, it's actually going to fail in so many hours or so many days or so many weeks. In this particular case, this mill did fail eventually, and we tracked it. We knew 4 days in advance it was going to go down. Unfortunately, they didn't follow the specifications to make sure that wouldn't happen. So again, we're just doing a monitoring of real-time inputs. We're analyzing for unusual behavior. We're feeding that into an analytics platform that can then track and tell us ahead of time what's going to happen. As we go to the next one, this is a sort of the results of what our recommended actions would be. So we compare the analysis, as I mentioned earlier about the business rules and optimization. That's exactly what we're doing here. They have lots of assets and very few resources to go out and do all the work. As you can see in the middle right there, you'll see a red urgent inspection. So this is telling the person, we really believe that you're going to have a problem on this one, and your next scheduled inspection or maintenance cycle is past when we think the failure is going to happen. So it's going to tell you, go inspect it and go do these things. In fact, this one does what we call a specified recommendation or prescriptive maintenance, which is saying, tell them to go check the lubrication, check the vibration, check the temperature of this particular asset, and find out if it's in the norm or not. Often, the reason I bring that up is oftentimes the monitoring of an asset, that data is really valuable for us to feed back into the model so that the data continues to grow and breathe and the model grows with it to know what's normal, what's not. The two blue ones there is just maintenance schedule. In other words, it's operating normally. Your next maintenance schedule is probably a good thing. But that yellow one, though, is an important one. As I mentioned earlier in the preventive maintenance program, you're typically going to be spending too much money. And this was telling you the asset's fine, and we want to postpone the maintenance on that particular asset. And this is where we get into the optimization. We can look across, you know, tens of thousands of assets and be able to draw through both in the business rules and the optimization, what should we do first, second, and third. I'm working with an aircraft company, and for them to be able to fly their aircraft, they have lots of different sites, lots of different mechanics with different experience and different skills. And so we not only be able to know where the parts are from an inventory management perspective, but we also need to know who's going to work on it and how and when and where. And our optimization can help handle all those kind of use cases. Now, in all of this, we're assuming that we're able to pull the data out and we'll be able to use it in some sort of platform, whether it's on the cloud, whether it's on-prem, so forth. But in some of the assets we deal with, it's a little difficult to get at the data on a consistent basis. So for instance, you remember the picture a little earlier about the haul truck. Well, the haul truck, when it goes down on the line, into the mine, may not always have access up to the cell tower or to the communications tower that we're trying to work with all the time. So how do I handle a case where there's a failure on a particular asset that's not connected? I was in an underground mine where we have a machine that we're tracking and doing predictive analytics on, and to be able to communicate up to the surface is sometimes problematic. So we need something that's not only going to do our predictive analytics on the cloud and learn from it or on-prem, but we need to make sure we can do it on the edge. And part of what I'm showing here is sort of an ecosystem that we use to be able to interface with all these pieces of equipment and have a system where we're returning the predictive analytics to those devices on the edge. Now, the on the edge might be on the machine. It might be on the line, in the manufacturing line. It might be at the plant. And then from there, go up to the corporate office or to the cloud or wherever the predictive analytics engine is. You need to be able to handle all cases. Sometimes it's a hybrid. So we look at not only being able to connect all those devices on the right-hand side and be able to pull them in through a gateway and feed them to our systems, but we also use our Watson IoT platform to do it over the cloud, on-prem, and then to interface with things like you see here, the SCADA and MES systems or building management system. The Edge Analytics provides us some really interesting opportunities. We can feed back to, so for instance, I have a fleet management company where the driver of the semi is going along, gets a warning light, and wants to know, what do I do? Now, they're on schedules, they get paid to deliver on time and so forth. If it's a small, minor issue, you don't want that driver to necessarily have to pull over. So their analytics is actually built into the vehicle information management system on the edge there in that truck, and will feed back a message to the driver on a panel to the right of them that says, minor issue, when you get to the end of your day, call us, we'll tell you how to correct the problem or bring it in for your next maintenance cycle and we'll solve the problem for you. On the other hand, if it's something that's critical, then we want to send a message to them that, hey, this is a problem, please pull over. If you've got a system that's running, so we have some systems where it's very critical equipment and a failure means catastrophic and could be potentially a safety issue as well, we might want to automatically send back a signal to the motor, to the device, whatever it is you're tracking and controlling, and tell it, hey, shut down or slow down or change some parameter in what you're doing to bring it back into a safe level and ensure that it doesn't fail. A couple of examples and how we and where we've done this before, just to give you a few flavors. It is sort of all over the place, both cloud, on-prem, as well as edge. We're doing it in the auto industry and smart buildings. We're using it in connected appliances, so your washers and dryers, things like that. We're working with a number of different vendors there, as well as the service companies who deal with it. And it's all riding on top of a Watson IoT ecosystem that's made of both partners for edge analytics. We don't create the devices that do the edge analytics, so obviously we work with partners to do that. But then we provide the services, the analytics, and the transforms and models and so forth to allow that to happen. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Simon, my friend from Prism Tech, to talk more about the edge analytics. Simon?
Okay, thanks very much, Lynn. So let me just advance the slides. So Lynn gave a really great overview there of some of the top-level reasons and the high-level business reasons and some really good examples of the IoT, what's an IoT in action, and showing why we may want to do some of these things. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the how. So this is a similar diagram to the chart that Lynn showed. Here we have some devices, some things in the Industrial Internet of Things at the bottom of the slide. And we're taking measurements, we're taking data from those sensors, and we'll be routing those to a gateway. So normally in a plant, we have very limited opportunity to get the sensor data directly from the plant equipment to the analytics platform. And so in the Industrial Internet of Things, there's a class of devices called gateways. So you see a gateway just above the two gray lines there, which is going to interface to a number of sensors or to a number of pieces of plant equipment, such as PLCs. And it's going to gather that data in. It's going to normalize the data. And then it's going to move that data from the edge of the plant, and it's going to move it to a computing platform that's going to be able to perform the analytics. So we see there a couple of different gateways streaming data to an edge server in this case, but that could be a server that's on the same facility, on the same physical site as the plant. It could be in a corporate data center, or indeed it could be in the cloud. So the gateway has to be able to know where the analytics is going to be performed and push the data to that location. So as Lynn explained, there's some data science that goes on with the data. And in order to create that model, we're going to have to generate some data, produce the model, and then typically we're going to want to push that model back from the data center back to the edge device. So you see that model, the blue lines there, coming back down to the gateway, and we can now run that model at the edge. So there's still data coming in from the sensors, and we can actually look at the incoming data, run through the model, and give some predictive score. So we see the prediction now affecting some action on the plant. So as Lynn said, that may be to slow the plant down. It may be to call a halt and actually stop the plant. So that's a sort of a practical view of how this works and the various devices and locations. So I'm going to go in a bit more detail as we go through this. So there are a number of discrete steps that customers go through. Typically the first is to do the measurement. So we're going to need to collect data from the physical world. Now sometimes there's very good digitization of the plant, and other times not, so I'll take a look at that in a moment as well. We're going to want to move the data through to an appropriate computing platform. Typically, the analysis is done on reasonably heavyweight computing resources. So we're going to want to take some historical data. We're going to want to create the model. that we're going to want to run that model on the plant. So we need to push the model back through the network to the gateway device. And then we're going to want to take the action. Now over on the right of the chart there, I've categorized those into two areas of OT, or operational technology, and IT. So I want to take a moment just to take a look at those two different areas of technology. So information technology and operational technology typically have been developed by different groups of people, different departments, and people with different skills and different philosophies, different goals in their implementation. So on the IT side, we have the applications that we're used to, so enterprise resource planning, CRM tools, and the data analytics. The OT side is really the plant control, so these are the manufacturing execution systems and SCADA. Where those two technologies come together, we really see the opportunity to exploit the data that's being created in the OT world if we can converge that data into the IT world. You see some of the market verticals, Lynn mentioned them as well, but we have smart manufacturing, smart agriculture, smart energy, smart grids shown there, smart cities and so on. So really it's that convergence that's integral to the growth of the industrial Internet of Things. Now, IT typically has started from a top-down approach. What does the business need in terms of applications to drive the management of the business? Whereas OT is really built from the ground up, with operational folks figuring out how do they actually want to make some process or assembly work. So we have a number of technologies coming together. So we have big data and lots of connectivity and lots of bandwidth. It's really brought these two worlds together. So we have the data that was once really held in the two separate silos. It can now be ubiquitous from the shop floor up into the IT world. And predictive analysis relies on getting the convergence of those two domains correct. So we talked about equipment that is already digitized. So if we have something with PLCs, reading sensors, maybe storing that data in a historian database. But what we also see is that we have what are described as dark assets. These are things that don't actually have the physical characteristics that we're interested in measured. So one of the examples may be vibration on a conveyor belt or acoustics for a bearing. We might also have a motor that we're driving and we're controlling the speed of, but not necessarily monitoring the current of that motor. So as we look at trying to work out why certain pieces of equipment are prone to failure, it's very likely that we're actually going to have to bring new sensors to that equipment, and we're going to have to do what we at Prism Tech and at AD Link, our parent company, we describe as connect the unconnected. So we may have some smart sensors. So these are sensors with some limited computing power to be able to connect directly to the gateway. But we may have more basic sensors, such as accelerometers or thermocouples. And there we might need to implement analog to digital conversion. So the interesting thing about putting new sensors onto equipment is that this is a non-intrusive way of measuring the current environment. So we can actually instrument the plant without affecting the operation of the plant. So there are some operational constraints in all of this, and there are some terms described as edge, so edge computing, fog computing, and cloud computing. And these really refer to physical locations or virtual locations of the computing equipment that we're going to use for the different pieces. So in this case, you see that we have down the bottom, we have operational technology equipment, so PLCs, and various, I should have some sensors down there as well, some analog sensors. But we connect those through to the gateway, and then we move the data, having normalized.
Simon, you with us? Seem to have a little technical difficulty here. Lynn, do you want to pick up where he left off?
Sure. Or myself or Greg. Greg, if you're on, you can probably also help in, although he might be in the same room as Simon. So what he's going through, and hopefully Simon will come back, is the fact that you're looking for a number of different things off of that particular edge server, and then feeding it through a gateway and into the cloud and into the analytic solution. One of the issues you come up with is the latency, the deterministic problems and so forth underneath. So for instance, I'm dealing with a plant where we're pulling in some very old PLCs and some additional devices and so forth that we come in, and we feed that into the gateway, and then it determines and runs a script that says, okay, what do I do with this data? Because oftentimes the constraints on the thing tells me, hey, I've got a lot of issues with my bandwidth or the cost of being able to send that through. So you want to be able to strip down the data or compress it and understand just what we need to send. If you're constantly sending everything, it's very expensive. If you're just sending out, say, the events or maybe a stripped-down version of saying, hey, my reading changed statistically significantly from this to this, now I send that event versus sending the entire data stream, which might be per second. And that will dramatically save you some time. It also then allows you to turn, as I mentioned earlier, some real-time decision-making. I can turn on and run the script and the model on the edge server there and return back response to that node and then to the PLC to say turn this machine on, turn it off, or whatever the case may be. I don't know if Simon is back in yet or not, but I can keep going if he wants.
Yep, please do.
Okay, great. So the modeling for predictive analytics is training the model. That's the first part of it. It's fairly significant. It usually means a lot of historical data. It really requires some significant power. It does require a human to look at it, not only from the perspective of a data science trying to go through the science of it, but a subject matter expert coming in and saying, does this make sense? Does this really fit what you've seen day to day? And so that's where it says it requires human intervention. We can do that on the server. We can do that in the cloud. There's a number of places we can create that model, but it's important for us to do that first and then deploy it out to the edge analytics devices and you do it for the edge or the assets on the edge that we're trying to control. Simon, I believe you're back.
Yes, I am.
Awesome.
Sorry about that.
Where did you go?
Problem with the phone in the hotel there. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Hopefully I didn't destroy your presentation too much, so go for it.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Lynn, for stepping in there. So hopefully I won't duplicate what Lynn has said there. So I believe Lynn was just saying that we may choose the location to do the modeling, either on-premise or in cloud, but we're going to need some good computing resource to do that. That is definitely in the IT realm. Just waiting for the slide to update there. So the runtime analysis is typically going to need less resource than doing the modeling. We're going to run that either on the gateway, directly on the incoming data, or we may have an edge computing server located close to the data. And we may use that data the live data to go back into the modeler to refine the model. So Lynn spoke about that earlier. But again, that may depend on the constraints that you have, the cost of bandwidth, and the availability of links back into the IT world. So the business analytics, we are likely to want to produce reports showing exactly what is going on with the plant in real time, and we're likely to also want to take the results of the model and push those into meaningful reports that we can actually affect the plant, so the human element can then take action in the plant. So a real quick slide on some of the work that we've been doing jointly with our friends at IBM. This is, so we have some really simple little demo that we have set up to replicate some of the use cases that we see in reality. So this is something that we take to customers and to shows. It's a small conveyor system. It actually has sensors, so discrete sensors, vibration, temperature, pressure, and we drive those sensors over to the gateway. You can see the gateway in the bottom left. And we can actually run the scoring engine, so taking the data model back and pushing that down to the gateway, so we can affect the speed of the motor. And that's a really effective demo. So if I just have a slightly more stylized view of that, you see there, exactly as we've described, we take the sensor data off the physical plant, we move it to the gateway, up to Watson in the cloud, or indeed PMQ on-prem, create the model, and then drive that back down in the scoring engine. So the gateway really has to provide sufficient computing power to acquire the data in real time. So we've got to normalize the data. We've got to get that data through the northbound IT domain. We may or we may not want to push the data northbound in real time, and we may or may not want to run the model in real time. So typically, we would see those are going to be something of an atom or an arm. If you want to do some more sophisticated processing, then it may be an Intel Core product there. And that gateway really needs, in terms of getting quick time to value from data, it needs an intuitive user interface to allow it to be put into the plant environment very easily hooked up to the sensors and to the northbound analysis framework, and then start pushing the data. So we have some examples here of the user interface. You can see the screenshot on the left there is actually the setup of a Modbus OT connection. So it allows you to fill in all the parameters for the specific data that you want to get from the OT equipment. On the top right, we're showing Node-RED there, so how you can flow the data through the gateway. This particular one is actually going into the runtime scoring engine and back to control the speed of the motor. So this is the Node-RED for the conveyor demo I showed you. And a real simple dashboard. So this is really useful just to see that data is flowing into the gateway, that something is actually happening before trying to figure out is the data actually getting to the analytics engine. So that's very useful in real time. So in summary then, predictive analysis really is transforming business today. It's allowing businesses to improve their profitability, but it's also allowing them to drive growth by coming up with new business models to use that data to create value for their downstream customers. So there are challenges, there are certainly challenges, but if the technologies used are wisely selected, then those challenges can certainly be mitigated and in some cases completely resolved. So we have we spoke about the connectivity and the bandwidth latency. Lynn spoke about actually having an asset physically underground in a mine. We may also see things that go into the ocean or out into space. So we spoke a little about cloud and edge and the decision as to where you would choose to perform the analytics. So finally, IBM, ADLINK, and PrismTech are currently at the forefront of implementing an effective end-to-end predictive analysis for the Industrial Internet of Things. So with that, I'd like to apologize for the telephone dropout in the middle of my presentation and hand back to Rich.
Well, thank you very much, Simon, and no apologies necessary. I thought that was pretty seamless the way we went in and out and in and out. I was pretty impressed with our little team here. Okay, so
well,
now
I should also thank Lynn for stepping in there.
Yes, you should. He was actually the star of the day, so thank you very much, Lynn. Okay, this is the time where you ask your questions and we answer your questions. So if you haven't already done so, put your questions into the console. And as I said earlier, we'll answer as many as we have time for. And if we don't have a chance to answer your question, somebody will get back to you after the e-cast is over with an answer. Okay, let's see. Let's start with Lynn, since you were quiet last. Can I only predict failures, or can I use it for replacement schedules? What do you say, Lynn?
And so part of the challenge we often have with analytics is, what if you don't have any failures? If you're trying to predict the operation efficiency or effectiveness of a particular asset, that's great if you have data that tells you when it failed and why it failed, and you can do some associative analysis to figure that out. But sometimes we don't want a failure ever. So let's take what I get to do almost every day, and that's get on an airplane. I don't want a failure in that stuff ever. So part of what you want to do is look at how often is it changed and what kind of post-mortem analysis do they do on equipment that you pull out. So that's more about survivability and doing some sort of life cycle, you know, analytics to tell me when do I replace it. So that's sort of what that – or can I use it for replacement schedules? Part of the optimization there, of course, it also includes inventory management, so we're making sure we have the right part in the right place at the right time. So the answer is no, I can and go beyond just predicting failures. And I can expand it to not only expect when it failures, but what normal operation is, what abnormal behavior is, replacement schedules, and so on.
Very good. Slight sidebar to that. I think people would be amazed to find out how often there are failures on planes. I mean, you know, obviously it's nothing that brings the plane down, but stuff seems to be going wrong all the time. But I guess that's a subject for another day.
Yeah, there's some interesting things that go there. So, for instance, they track how often an aircraft lands hard. And it's not just the aircraft. It's the weather. It's the pilot. And so part of the things in predictive analytics, the reason I bring it up, is it's sometimes more than just the asset that you're tracking. You can have a motor. You can have a tool. You can have a big excavator, whatever the case may be. And based on the operator, it behaves differently. And so you want to be able to track in, well, who's running it? And what are they doing that makes it different than other operators? So just wanted to show that there's more than just the typical temperature, speed, and so forth. It's the people and weather. I've seen weather affect equipment in different ways, and not just the stuff that's outside, but stuff that's inside as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So in a situation like that, is it possible to have too much information?
Well, typically no. For a data scientist, the more the merrier. If you look at what, classic, you think of statistic analytics, you take a subset of the data, you do your analysis, and you come up with an answer and the confidence in that answer, right? But in data mining, man, we want as much as we can. We throw the kitchen sink at it and see what comes out and tells us what's more important than another. Because sometimes the data changes, and you'll come out with a result that might surprise you that a new or an input that you've seen before that wasn't important is now suddenly impacting the performance of that particular asset. So the answer is no, I want as much data as I can.
And if you run the calculation twice and get two different answers?
Well, if you do it twice right in a row and get different answers, well, that'd be a surprise. I would expect over a period of time that yes, I would probably get different answers. That's to be expected, and that's what really sort of the whole idea behind machine learning. That as data comes in, because it's like a living, breathing thing, it's going to grow and change. So you would expect different answers.
Okay, great. All righty. Do Prism Tech software products work only along of AD-Link products or handling open platform?
Yeah, so I'll take that one. So our software products are, I would say, generic. We certainly deliver them as part of an integrated product with AD-Link, but we have ports for our software onto different operating systems. So various flavors of Linux today. Our Windows port will come out later this summer. So we're certainly able to sell the software into open platforms. There are, I think, some advantages in terms of the integration, in terms of integration of the actual Connect piece that I spoke about, but on our own platform, we have really tight integration for device management, for example. So if the gateways are delivered through multiple layers of supply chain, you may not know physically where in the world that gateway is, or indeed who actually is the end user and owns the physical asset. But we're still able to push updates through the system in much the same way that we've become familiar with our cell phones. So, yes, we can sell onto open platforms. There are benefits in having a tightly integrated product that comes along with an AD-Link product.
Very good. Okay, next question. Is Edge Analytics only good for cases where I can't always connect to Wi-Fi or other wireless? I think that's a Lynn question.
Well, it's probably both Simon and I. He might have some additional flavors or information on it. No, because Edge Analytics certainly was, I think, initially started out with, well, if I can't connect, I need something that's going to store the data and maybe make some decisions and feed it back. But now with the speed of data and how much being generated by a particular asset, so let's go back to that haul truck example I showed in the slides. That piece of equipment has, at last count, that we were integrated with 8 different systems on the truck. And so there's a lot of data being fed in. Holy smokes, it's just literally gigabytes of data each day that's being generated. And then we're expected to be able to analyze that and transmit it up. Way too much data. So having something on the edge that allows me to cut that down to size so I'm only transmitting what's really useful during the day, being able to respond back to the truck when it's not connected. And then at the end of the day, when it comes in, it actually does a full download of all the raw data so we can do predictive analytics on it from training our models and so forth. So you want to be able to look at the whole scenario, not just the connectivity. So it can be very useful in high-speed scenarios, disconnected scenarios, and where you want the action to be taken immediately on the asset. Simon, I don't know if you have a difference of opinion or to add to that.
No, I think you hit all of the things that were going through my head to answer for that question there. I'd just reiterate really that in terms of connectivity, the question was specifically about Wi-Fi and wireless. That clearly, in the case of the truck, then having a wired LAN is going to be difficult. But there are connection possibilities not just through Wi-Fi, but through 3G and 4G LTE. So there's certainly implementations which wouldn't be restricted in that way. But as Lynn said, if you really need that answer quickly, then you're more likely to do that analytics on the edge, or if the cost of pushing the data, if that was video data coming off that truck, then you probably wouldn't want to push live video data over 4G because the costs would become prohibitive. So really, every case is a little unique, and just need to look at the constraints of each situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's one, I'll call it a large package delivery company that we're working with, and their conveyors and so forth and systems being able to route where those packages go, and then the conveyor system itself, it's miles and miles and miles conveyors. It's quite fascinating to watch. But what's unique about it is that you've got a lot of decisions to be made at different points throughout the system. And having edge analytics at different points through the system where there's sort of critical mass, if you will, of the motors and sensors and so forth, and being able to take action immediately. Because they don't want to have, or can they afford, a human being to be notified via, say, a text message or whatever, and then have to go to wherever that is in the plant or in the distribution center and be able to then, of course, fix the problem. They'd rather have, if possible, the system fix itself, and they have some mechanisms and actions that it actually can send a signal, fix the problem, and then continue on moving the packages out to where the trucks are ready to pick them up. So it's not just necessarily about communication. It's also about the scenario of how quickly do you want to take an action, and do you want to do it without human intervention? Just thought I'd bring that up.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see. I'm going to paraphrase this next one, so bear with me. Are you able to manage all of the implementation, and that includes the OT and the Watson elements? I think that's what this person is trying to say.
Yeah, so if I make a start to that, and then Lynn, if you want to jump in as I go through. So the full end-to-end implementation is likely to require input from the customer, potentially from a system integrator, and also from the IBM folks. So it's a slightly broad scope of question. So while we certainly have the capability to take data off OT and push it to Watson, the specifics, and I think we'd probably would be interested in taking that discussion offline to figure out what's the most appropriate implementation and who would be most appropriate to do each phase of that implementation. But in theory, yes. In practice, let's understand exactly what the all of the different requirements of that project are and see who's best placed.
Yeah, exactly. Because part of the answer is, right, we hate this answer, it depends. I have some customers where the goal is to be able to do handoff to the people within the corporation so they can become the experts of running the system. And then I have some customers who don't want anything to do with it, and they want to completely farm it out to somebody else. So it really depends on what role the company or the customer wants to play and what skill sets they have. Do they have a data scientist? Do they have the necessary skill set within the company to hand that off, or do they need to look elsewhere? So it really depends on who the customer is and what role they want us to take.
Well, thank you for acknowledging that. I thought I was the only one who hated that answer, but apparently I'm not the only person.
No, it's because it's like the analogy when someone says, hey, can you build me a house? Well, how big? How small? How ornate? How plain? You really can't tell until you get into the details.
I don't know. The builder just seems to build it as big as he wants and then just charges for it. But that again, is some subject for another day.
Yep.
Okay. We're getting up to it. Let's see if we can handle a couple more questions. Is there more than a health score generated? What about optimization?
So I tried to cover part of this in the presentation itself, and that's sort of the idea of the predictive score on the asset, then going to the business rules and the optimization. But I do want to make another comment here as well. There are certain products and solutions out there today that say, here's your health score. And really what it's doing is giving you a sort of culmination of, based on the other assets in its class, we've seen that it lasts for 6 months, a year, whatever the time frame is. and you've been running for, say, 4 months out of six, so you're 66% through your life cycle, so it'll say you have a 33% health score, which really has nothing with respect to, you know, how's it really doing. And maybe this particular asset is unique. So, for instance, my pickup truck, I have 275,000 miles on it. And you know, most of the same class die at around 180. Well, am I unique? I don't know. Maybe. But you can't take a generic health score and say it applies across the board to other assets. What you really want to look for is the individual and specific history of that asset, how it's used, and come up with a truly unique or specific health score for that asset. And then, as I mentioned before, the business rules, the optimization. That typically comes in and changes your PM strategy and changes your preventative maintenance schedule so that you can optimize based on the asset, its criticality, the parts you have on hand, who's going to do it, and so on.
Very good. Okay, I think we're going to take one more question, and I'll let you guys figure out who wants this. Won't the data collection actually hinder the performance? How will the collection of data happen in a non-intrusive way?
Yeah, so I'll take that one. So that depends a little bit on a number of things. So if I can use Lynn's it depends answer as well. So there's definitely a question of sizing in working out what bandwidth of data is coming off the sensors. So I assume this is a high bandwidth sensor question. But if the data is relatively slow, then we may be able to have many sensors coming through a single gateway with fairly modest computing resources. If we have very, very fast data, then we may want to go from something like an Atom up to something like a Core i5 or Core i7. And it really depends what level of application and modeling is needed to be run on that data. So it depends. It's certainly possible to architect a system where high bandwidth data will flow without hindering the performance. If the system is not engineered properly, then it's certainly possible to hinder the performance as the data is collected.
Yeah, usually the data collection or the sensors are often separate from the system controlling the unit and telling it what to do. I have an underground piece of equipment that has 22,000 sensors on it, tracking every second, and they're able to capture that and, you know, perform edge analytics on it without any issues. So it does depend on where you're pulling that data from. Additionally, sometimes you have external sensors that have nothing to do with the operation, not part of the PLC or whatever kind of control logics control you have on the asset. So again, it depends on the scenario, and we can look at it and tell you more efficiently and effectively once we know the real details.
Very good, gentlemen. I'm afraid that we have to wrap it up here. That's all we have time for. As I said, if we did not answer your question, we will get back to you after this is over with an answer. I'd like to thank both our speakers, Lynn and Simon, for doing a great job. I certainly learned a lot. And we want to thank our two sponsors, IBM and Prism Tech. And, of course, we'd never be able to do any of these things without you, the engineer. So thank you all for attending, and have a great day, everybody.